I'm Dave Heller, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Opening statements get underway tomorrow in the corruption case against Philadelphia District Attorney Seth Williams. WHYY's Dave Davies reports the parties spent the day selecting the jury that will hear the case.
It will be a jury of 10 women and 2 men and only 2 African Americans in the case against Philadelphia's first black DA. Neither Williams, his attorneys, nor prosecutors are talking about what's ahead. Williams is accused of selling his influence for cash trips and other gifts, stealing money intended for his mother's care, and more. Former prosecutor George Perry says Williams would do best with a jury of Philadelphians.
In Philadelphia, doing a pal a favor, and the pal, you know, picks up your bar tab or maybe pays for a vacation or whatever, you know, I think a Philadelphia jury might shrug its shoulders.
But Perry says this case is in federal court, so jurors come from 9 counties in eastern Pennsylvania.
And they tend to be much more conservative, much more straight-laced, and much more demanding of their public officials.
The trial is expected to take 3 to 4 weeks. Dave Davies, WHYY News.
The construction boom in the so-called River Wards, once Philadelphia's industrial hub, has unleashed a lurking monster, toxic lead dust. That's the title of a new article in the Philadelphia Daily News, part of the Toxic City series. Joining me are two of the reporters in that series, Barbara Laker and Wendy Ruderman, who, along with Dylan Purcell, put out the story entitled In Their Own Backyards. Barbara, Wendy, welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having us.
What was the idea for this specific report on lead in soil, and when did it start?
Well, we began realizing that there was a lot of construction going on in Fishtown, Port Richmond, and Kensington, that it was sort of almost at the tail end now of the construction boom there, and it was quickly gentrifying.
Those are the river wards you're referring to.
The river wards, they run along the Delaware River, and they were the hub of industry because of the port issue there. And so we had heard that there was lead in the soil left over from historic emissions when this was really an industrial center of the city, and there were a lot of lead smelters in the area. And back then, in the beginning in the 1850s all the way up into the mid 1990s, lead was not viewed as toxic. It was viewed as durable. So lead was used in everything from paints to plastics, and they would grind it up into a fine powder, and then it would go, the residue would spew out of smokestacks. And then once lead gets into the soil, it really doesn't disintegrate. It's heavy, so it just lays there.
Though, Barbara, in the course of you three accumulating some 114 samples, we learned that 3/4 of them had excessive levels of lead.
Right. We were actually surprised of the number, but we looked at 114 properties across this area, and in some properties we took, like, say, 3 to 4 samples, and they were the EPA says that 400 is the limit, parts per million, of the threshold for where it's not safe for children to play. And so we found that almost 3/4 of our samples were above that 400. And some were, like, the highest we found was almost 10,000, which obviously really seriously exceeds the limit that the EPA says is safe for children to play in.
So in the course of interviewing homeowners, and Jana Curtis, and if I have the pronunciation, Jenna Drozdik.
Correct.
What recourse do they have upon learning that there are hazardous levels of lead in the soil in their backyards where their very young children play? What recourse do they have at this juncture?
A lot of the residents, like Jana Curtis, they want certain measures taken so that, like, if a developer starts digging in the dirt before they put the first shovel in the dirt, that they get the soil tested in this area and see if it is contaminated with lead, and then take the steps. So, say, put like a mesh fence up instead of a chain link fence. Make sure that everything's wetted and covered, and so that it's not blowing around into playgrounds and into people's yards and all into the air.
A lot of the parents were unaware of the problem. So we found people who specifically bought in this neighborhood because these neighborhoods have the holy grail of city neighborhoods. They have backyards, not huge backyards, but they come with play spaces for kids and barbecues, and so you can have the best of both worlds. And
specifically for the very youngest toddlers, infants, etc., who don't yet require big playgrounds, it's a perfect size lot for
them. It's a perfect lot to just put them down on the ground and let them crawl around and explore. And this was the hardest part of the series, I think, was testing people's soil and them not expecting it to come, anything to come of it. And to some extent, us either. We were like, well, this backyard's beautiful. Of course, it's going to be fine. And then it would come back with an off the charts lead level in the soil. And then we would have to go knock on people's door and tell them, and some people would get teary, and because this is their home, you know what I mean? This is the place you're supposed to feel safe. You're supposed to feel good about it. You're supposed to come home from a long day at work, and this is your sanctuary, and you just bought this piece of property, and I'm basically telling you that your backyard is contaminated with lead. And this was unexpected to many parents, and I was surprised that I wasn't emotionally prepared, or neither were they, for the reaction or what was going to happen after the test came back.
Thank you so much for bringing this very important issue to our listeners as well as the readers of the Philadelphia Daily News.
Thanks so much.
Thanks,
Dave.
So very much for having us.
Barbara Laker, Wendy Ruderman, you can hear more of our conversation at newsworks.org. In the wake of last week's shooting at a congressional baseball practice, some Democrats are renewing calls for stricter gun control measures, while some Republicans are calling for looser gun laws. WHYY's congressional correspondent Matt Laszlo looks at the renewed debate on Capitol Hill and whether one Republican senator who drew attention for demanding more background checks for gun buyers will be renewing his efforts.
Lawmakers from the region were shaken by the shooting. Republican Pat Meehan from Philadelphia's western suburbs wasn't at the practice because he's a pitcher and they worked his arm the day before. He would have been right in front of the shooter had he been there that day. Meehan broke down when explaining to reporters what congressional baseball means to him and others.
The camaraderie that we have in the mornings. Sorry, I'm cutting. The camaraderie we have in the mornings when we are there is such a change from the pressures that we all feel on a regular basis, and it's sort of a return to the fun things. You know, Scalise is the whip, but out there on the field, we treat each other like we're back in high school again.
After the shooting, a Kentucky Republican introduced a bill to allow people with concealed carry permits in their home states to bring weapons with them into Washington. Some Democrats have used the shooting to call for stricter gun laws. The main gun control bill in the Capitol is still the one sponsored by Pennsylvania Republican Senator Pat Toomey. It's called the Toomey Manchin Bill and would require background checks for more types of gun sales. While briskly walking through the Capitol, Senator Toomey says he doesn't have a plan to introduce the bill in this Congress.
I don't have a date in mind, but I'd be open to that. You know, I still support the policy. I know Senator Manchin does as well. So we'll see.
The bill was voted on twice, and while it got more than 50 votes each time, Republicans successfully filibustered it. Toomey says the math just doesn't seem to add up for it.
Look, it doesn't appear that we have the votes, right? I mean, we tried this twice. We went backwards on the second one, and I'm not aware of anybody that, you know, would change their vote. So I'm going to make progress.
In his re-election campaign last year, Toomey won the endorsement from Americans for Responsible Solutions, the gun violence prevention organization started by former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords. The group's executive director, Peter Ambler, says they don't regret endorsing Toomey, even though he isn't pushing his gun control bill this session. Ambler says they want more Toomeys in Congress.
Ran on a platform that emphasized gun violence prevention. It was something that you could have never imagined a Republican doing 5 years before he did it. And that's why we endorsed him, and that's why we stand by our endorsement of him today.
Ambler says Toomey was a part of a broader nationwide movement that made a difference in their state-level campaigns to change the nation's gun laws.
We indisputably moved the debate forward. His example helped us get universal background checks laws passed in 9 states across the country. He and other leaders on both sides of the aisle helped us pass over 150 other pieces of legislation in 40 states over the last four years and change.
But the bill's other main sponsor, Democratic Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, says he thinks the bill could pass in this Congress if President Trump was brought on board. He says he would give cover to more moderate senators.
Because they were scared, everybody that was fighting and opposing and pushing back on all their members said, yeah, but Barack Obama wants to take all of our guns, so if you give him this a little bit, he'll take more.
Yeah.
They don't believe that Donald Trump will do that, so I don't either. And I'm sure not going to do it, okay? But you need someone of that high level to be able to know they're going to protect their rights.
As for the mood around gun control in general in this Congress, it seems to be more of a gun rights than a gun control Congress. Pennsylvania Republican Ryan Costello says he doesn't hear anything about stricter gun laws.
I have not. Because if anything, I've heard more sort of headed in the other direction from some.
The NRA is pushing an effort to get a national concealed carry bill passed, while also trying to make it easier for people to get silencers for their weapons, leaving proponents of stricter gun laws focusing more on state capitals. For WHYY News, Matt Laszlo, Washington.
This story is part of our project answering your questions about the Philadelphia region. What are you curious about? Learn more and ask your questions for WHYY at newsworks.org. There's been a lot of discussion about the crudeness of public discourse and emboldening the expression of biased viewpoints during the past year, starting with the 2016 presidential election campaign. In York County, several bias incidents garnered national media attention. In the third part of our series, Grappling with Racial Tension, Keystone Crossroads' Emily Previty checks in on how communities have responded.
Within a month of the 2016 election, former West York Mayor Charles Wasco was pressured to resign after posting offensive photos of President Barack Obama and his family on Facebook. Sean Malk, then borough council president, was appointed to finish Wasco's term, and he's now running unopposed for a full 4 years.
There are families still here suffering from systematic racism and the hurt that it causes. And we need to stay focused on the topic until no one has to feel afraid anymore, and certainly that no one has to feel like they have to move.
I've reached out to Wasco multiple times, but he's ignored all of my interview requests. In the meantime, it seems like the ordeal has pushed community leaders to confront racial tension in the 4,000-person borough, and results have been mixed. Malk says the public dialogue has made him and his family a target.
I've been called some pretty interesting names. My 4-year-old children had been targeted because they have a little darker tone to their skin. The N-word has been used in reference to them.
And at a council meeting earlier this year, Malk retold a story from a black constituent whose child was called a racial slur by another adult. Malk said the word and was criticized for it.
I regret that anybody had any visceral pain from what I was putting forward from someone else. But I don't regret the fact that I'm shining a light on the very ugly, dark problem we have.
As far as policy, borough officials are updating anti-discrimination ordinances, police have shifted their focus to neighborhood foot patrols and developing relationships with residents, and the City of York's Human Relations Council now has its office in West York, which Malk says could be an opportunity for residents to file complaints and use other council services. And there's been another response from outside the borough and the traditional political realm. Local hip-hop artist Naku, whose real name is Terrell Bryant, produced a song Brothers last winter, and it's gotten millions of views on YouTube and listens on iTunes and Spotify.
Here is a young man who understands what a divisive, powerful situation he's talking about, and he found a way to get through to people.
He saw the song that went viral, and he was like really thankful. He thanked me for doing that because he said that we need more of that as youth, And then in our community, we need more people like that. We need more people to spread the word. And that he was just real happy because he's trying to do the same thing. He's trying to make a change.
Naku produced Brothers with another hip-hop artist named Youngverse, a white ex-Marine living in Tulsa, Oklahoma. But the seed for the song was first planted over a year before that. Naku told me about one winter afternoon when he was out shoveling snow to make some money, and a cop drove by and yelled a racial slur at him. Naku says he also was inspired by the election and related bias incidents.
Recently, since Donald Trump and all that stuff, I see on TV and you see on the internet a whole bunch of things like racial problems starting to happen again.
And some of it was happening in his own backyard. Besides the Wasco controversy, Naku also mentioned what happened at the York County School of Technology right after the election, when students were filmed walking with a Trump sign at York Tech, as someone yelled "White Power" from off screen.
White power!
Tech already had some programming in place meant to address racial tension and promote diversity, but the video went viral, and after that, administrators felt compelled to take action. One major move was hiring Carla Christopher to fill the diversity coordinator position that had been vacant for years. Christopher is formerly York's poet laureate and a healthcare advocate, has since introduced an evidence-based approach for responding to bias incidents on top of existing disciplinary measures like suspensions and parent conferences.
The students get reflection exercises, teaching empathy. When they come back, they have to actually do a processing session with either myself or one of the school counselors to talk about the empathy aspect, putting themselves in other people's shoes, understanding the damage that they do.
Christopher says her interactions with students and staff have been really positive so far, but some teachers are more responsive than others. She says a number of factors could be at play, including the fact that she's been there so far during the busiest times of the school year, standardized testing in the spring, followed by the end of classes for summer.
Am I prepared for that some of the teachers who I don't hear back from, that there might be more to their reticence? Sure. It could be outright racism. It could be defensiveness. It could be thinking that I'm coming to train wreck their curriculum.
Christopher says she has to be mindful not only of teacher concerns, but also the area's complex history of racial tension.
Everything about what's going on in one place where 14 school districts are coming together, where people of every income level are coming together, where people who have families that have history all over the place are coming together. Every single incident has a million moving parts.
Emily Previty, Keystone Crossroads.
Most stars make their way across the universe with a solar partner, or two, or more. But perhaps even the singles, our sun included, are wandering in search of their lost twins. Let's go searching with Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. Derek, this calls for some potential rethinking. I thought our sun was once and always a solitary explorer.
Well, actually, Dave, if you take a look at the night sky, one of the things you'll find is, as you said, that most of the stars in the sky are multiples of some type. Binary stars, meaning two, or some multiple kind of star system going all the way up to something as complicated as a globular cluster where you might find 100,000 stars all clustered together. So if that is the case, what is the mechanism for the birth of a single star? And in trying to answer this question, astronomers have come to recognize that there's a much greater possibility that these single stars do indeed start off with siblings, and somehow they become separated from their siblings during their development and then become individual stars on their own. In fact, we can even look at our own star, our sun, and say that at some point in its very early history, it too probably had a sibling that's no longer with us, but wandering somewhere around the Milky Way galaxy.
So now let's shed light on the longest amount of daylight of the year coming up this Wednesday.
You're right. Summer solstice starts at 12:24 a.m. This will be the day in which we have 15 hours of daylight. The sun rises in the morning at 5:31. It sets in the evening at 8:33. Sunrise has been hanging around 5:31 in the morning for about a week now, but we slipped a few seconds on that today. However, sunset is dwelling at 8:33 until July 4th, and then we start to lose daylight on that end of the day also.
So wait a minute, summer's just starting.
You could try to say that summer is just starting, but it depends how you want to divide it out. If you go by the equinoxes and the solstices, well, sure, it turns out that this Wednesday is the first day of what we call summer, but it's all about where the Earth is in its orbit around the sun. So that's the real piece here that's driving everything. The Earth arrives at this particular position on Wednesday morning at 12:24 in the morning. So we identify the summer solstice as just being a point in time where the Earth reaches this particular position in its orbit around the sun, and it continues on its orbit around the sun. But for us, we now dwell in this lovely time of year, but we should always keep in mind that the times, they are a-changing, and we will begin to see the change in the number of hours of daylight as we move on through July and certainly into August.
When the sky finally darkens, what's available to be seen this week?
We've now reached the point in our observing season, and it just happens to come at the perfect time of year, in which we can see both Jupiter and Saturn in the evening sky at reasonable times. So by 10 p.m. in the evening, Jupiter is now over in the southwestern portion of the sky, but Saturn is now high enough in the eastern sky that we can see it without much difficulty at all. It's a perfect time for folks to come to the Franklin Institute, where this Thursday, our Night Skies at the Observatory program will allow them to get a great view of both of these planets in the same night. If you happen to be up in the very early morning hours, 4:45 a.m. tomorrow, you'll find the thin, waning crescent moon and Venus are together just before sunrise over on the eastern side of the sky. So you can catch all of these great sights if you're willing to lose a few hours of sleep here and there.
Thanks, Derek.
My pleasure, Dave.
Derek Pitts, chief astronomer at the Franklin Institute. He joins us each week at this time on NewsWorks Tonight. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov, Kimberly Haas, Ty Johnson, and Brett Rader. Find us on iTunes or listen back at newsworks.org. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dave Heller for NewsWorks Tonight.